You ever had a day where you, from the time you get up, you kind of think you're in the Twilight Zone? You're either in the Twilight Zone or you're in the land of the Lilliputians. Just about everything I heard today was inane. People either breaching public trust, distorting our fundamental freedoms, governments just acting for the sake of doing something for the next dépliant, the next flyer or the elections. Nobody asked them to do it. It was a weird day. I just want to, you know, run through some of the stories that hit me today and kept coming through the day. And we want to hear from you about these. It's Thursday. It's sort of wrap-up day for us. First thing that hit me was the National Post front page. In Quebec, two liberals select 14 delegates. You heard this. This is true. There was a riding where only two liberals showed up, and they elected the entire slate of 14 delegates that would go to the convention. And apparently this happened in riding after riding after riding. 94 liberals in one riding, 57 in another, 45 in a third. And that's all that showed up to elect the slates of delegates. 17% of the party's 38,000 members in Quebec voted. And in some of those ridings, like this one in Abitibi-Bay, James Nunavik, two people elected the entire slate. We're going to talk about the state of the party. And this is actually a story that, I won't say it was broken here, but I first heard it on this show, and we were talking to Angela Persichelli several weeks ago, and he said the manipulation of the vote in Quebec is something extraordinary, and that was one of the reasons why everybody was ganging up on Joe Volpe, who had signed up about half the new party members, and he wasn't sharing with anybody. Well, now you see why. A couple of delegates can elect the whole slate. It's madness. Then, of course, during the day, the madness didn't stop. During the day, I was just talking with Jim about that. For those of you who didn't hear, I'm going to repeat it. Several years ago, Juliet O'Neill, an Ottawa Citizen reporter who first had the lead that there was something amiss in the Aurora case, had her home invaded by RCMP officers the same day that a judge had turned down a warrant request. And the warrant request was turned down on the grounds that national security or not national security, there's a line you don't cross unless you have real evidence. So now, after Juliet O'Neill's gone through several years of this legal ordeal, waiting and waiting and waiting, today, finally, an Ontario judge dealt what was rightly called a landmark blow for freedom. He struck down a secrecy law. Didn't just say that the RCMP was wrong in marching into her house at 8 o'clock in the morning. Imagine that. The knock on your door. The knock on your door. I don't know about some of you out there who've come from other countries, but that was one of the reasons that my family left the Soviet Union. No knocks on the door. And there was Juliet O'Neill in her house coat, and here come the RCMP guys marching in and marching out with case of documents. Well, the judge today said that the law they used to justify the raid was wrong. Ontario Judge Lynn Ratushny said the Mounties used the specter, the facade of criminal charges against Ottawa citizen reporter, the threat of criminal charges against Ottawa reporter Juliet O'Neill to try to uncover her confidential sources, and that cast a chill over the entire media. Judge said that Ms. O'Neill was being treated as one of its investigative arms, and that was just plain wrong. You know, great civil libertarians for the past century have said that's the one right most prized, or that should be most prized by free people, the right to be let alone. If the state cannot achieve its goals, prove its cases using normal means, then they lose. They can't breach our fundamental freedoms. Our freedoms are natural freedoms. We don't cede these natural liberties to the state. Just like that. We don't cede any natural liberties. We cede certain things to the state, our taxes, our cooperation, for the provision of those services and goods that are better done together. That's it. National security? Very good. But it's got to be done by the book. We can't mirror what we're seeking to destroy. We're going to continue with a review of this day before we get to our first guest right after this, and because we got to pay some bills too. And before we went and paid some bills, I was describing what a crazy news day I found this to be. You know, two liberals electing slates of delegates. The compromise of a reporter's freedoms, Juliet O'Neill case. We become a society that's become so bloody immune to the things that we should really care about. Our individual consequence. The right to stand up and say what you want without being branded an enemy of the people, as Henrik Ibsen wrote in that great play of his so long ago. Great American justice Felix Frankfurter put it best. He said, the security of one's person, of one's privacy, of one's life against arbitrary intrusion or control by the state is basic to a free society. Any attempt at intrusion and control based solely on the authority of laws passed without the equity of just consideration is inconsistent with the conception of human rights enshrined in the history and basic constitutional documents of every free nation. I suddenly get the feeling that Canada is really going down the slippery slope, becoming a people that run between the raindrops in a society that dares not care, governed by men until the election of this prime minister, who's had some bold visions, but some of his ministers we discussed yesterday on the Justice Agenda are problematic, governed for the most part by governors who can no longer tell right from wrong. And that inability to tell right from wrong seeps down to society, where we want strict conformity with the silliest orthodoxies. And if anybody dares speak out against an orthodoxy, well, all kinds of things go on. And that was yet another story of today. And we're going to be discussing that with our first guest. And let me set the scenario of this story. The scenario is set by, over a year ago, by the first hearings on the anti-tobacco laws, and go back, the anti-smoking laws, making them even tougher. And a group of very talented professionals, lawyers, teachers, got together and formed something called CAGE, Citizens Against Government Encroachment. The co-founder, Dr. David Romano, PhD, an expert in the Middle East, who taught some of the largest classes at McGill, one of the most popular lectures at McGill, simply believed society has to be free. He wasn't a smoker. He simply believed that government laws have to stop somewhere. Being an expert in Arab nationalism, having traveled to Turkey and Syria and Iraq, he saw what statocratic control can do and social engineering can do to a people. And he, together with his brother and co-founder of CAGE, Dan Romano, started this organization and had a few protests and had debates at McGill, some of it having to do with the sketchy science behind the anti-smoking legislation. And it is sketchy, by the way. It's all epidemiology. There's no... All of that is epidemiology. But they were basically voicing the opinion that you leave it up to the merchants to decide. Are you a smoking establishment or are you not a smoking establishment? Are you a smoking cab or are you not a smoking cab? Basic freedom. They weren't saying you had to have smoking sections in restaurants. They were putting forward a position. And because of that position, Dr. David Romano has been vilified on a website, continuously attacked, but not just on a website. He's taken a teaching position in the States, and the anti-smoking crowd have followed him there. He's become an enemy of the people for speaking freely. And we're very pleased and proud to have with us his brother, the co-founder of CAGE, and our friend Dan Romano. Dan, welcome.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on again, Daryl.
I'm going to let you give our listeners some of the craziness from this site attacking your brother David and set the background for us of how these Looney Tunes started.
Well, first of all, Beryl, I just want to say that today I'm an angrier man than you are.
Oh, that's tough.
But for sure...
But I'll let you have it today.
No competition, all right? So what these folks have done, basically, it seems like they couldn't meet us on the facts. Every single letter, every single statement put out by CAGE, every single letter written by David Romano has been factually based, and with references available. All the references are available on the website. They cannot meet us on the facts. But because what we're saying...
By the way, let's give everybody the website. It's Cage Canada, one word, C-A-G-E, Canada, cagecanada.ca. Go ahead.
That's right. Very easy to get. Okay? So what they've done is attack the messenger, basically, because what we're saying is against what they believe, because it's against the line that's accepted, because it's against their self-righteous goals and ends. They're attacking us. And I guess they must have done analysis between my brother and I, decided that he, because he's an employee of universities, is probably a softer target. They went for him, which...
You have several law degrees.
Yeah, well, you know, it's... I'm not... I work for myself right now, and notoriety would only actually help
me. Yeah, sure.
But in his case, I guess they thought he was the softer target, and so they went for him. They must have spent months researching Cage. Every single letter we put out to the newspapers, they had a collection of them. They had they studied the website, they studied the activities that we've done, everything that all the fundraising things that we've done, and they've built this extensive website, 13 pages. All about, and the title of the website is David Romano for Sale. And the basic premise is that he's a corporate whore. Because basically, the premise is, if he's pro-tobacco, which he's not, and Cage is not in any way, in fact, it's only the tobacco issue is only one of...
Was simply the issue that sparked it.
Well,
creation.
Actually, not really. Actually, the issue that sparked it was helmets. And then we.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it was bicycle helmets.
That's
My
right.
My brother and I like riding our bikes without our helmets on. And we did research and we found out that it's actually safer without a helmet than with.
Dan, hold that thought. We just got to pay some bills. We'll be right back.
Okay.
And we're talking with Dan Romano, co-founder of Cage Citizens Against Government Encroachment, who tonight says. And it not only says he is an angrier man than I am because his brother is under vicious attack, an attack that has followed him from McGill University to the university he teaches in the United States in an effort simply to destroy him for speaking out in a position about the smoking laws not being right. And I think before Dan continues with what's happened, I just want to read to you all something that has become a message and a metaphor in our society. This is on Cage Canada's website about what is happening to his brother David. That the lessons from all this is that if you speak out against us, the politically correct us, then we will destroy you. We will defame you. We will ruin your life and career. We will poison your reputation. And we will invent whatever we can to bring shame onto you. If you speak out against our righteousness, we will silence you. If you act against us and our efforts, which we pursue for your own good, God, sounds like the last Liberal government. Then you must either be mentally unstable, evil, or a corporate whore, and we will do everything in our power to portray you as such, both in the public eye and in your private and career lives. And I just want to focus on one phrase in there. And I don't know, Dan, if you wrote this.
I'm the one. I'm the author.
That then you must be either mentally unstable,
evil, or a corporate whore.
Now, and how did Russia, and how did Russia, how did the Soviet Union get a lot of their prisoners in jail who, they said, well, if you're opposing the state, if you're opposing the president, then you ipso facto have to be crazy to go up against the state, therefore you are mentally unstable and shove them into psychiatric hospitals.
That's exactly the logic that's being promoted in this website. And they actually, I didn't make these up, this mentally unstable, the website is...
No, she wrote this. I mean, the website's supposedly written by, the name on the letters is Kathy Bell. They're outrageous stuff.
Right. So she writes, she doesn't sign her address and all that because David Romano and his gang of cult followers are most likely mentally unstable, so she fears for her safety. So she's sending these letters anonymously.
Now, just to give some more background on your brother, David, as far as instability or as far as her fears... he's all of, 5'3", been published by Cambridge University Press, and has a PhD from the University of Toronto and one of the most respected lecturers at McGill.
And from knowing him for all 36 years of his life, he's also one of the most honorable and distinguished people that I know. And I'm not just saying that because he's my brother. I mean, even if he weren't, if I knew this person as a total stranger, I would have the utmost respect for him.
Well, I know him, and I agree with you, Dan. But the point is, you have a right to be dishonorable. The point of freedom is to be wrong, but not to be slandered and pursued by these falsely pious Johnny do-gooders who think they're doing good, and they're doing nothing but making everybody's life miserable.
Well, here's the other part that I like. The part about corporate whore, that's the big subheading on the website is, corporate whore, you decide. Now, she's implying that David and myself and Cage are financed by the tobacco industry. Now, I want to say it now publicly. I didn't want David to respond to this because I don't want him responding tit for tat to this kind of scurrilous attack. But publicly, right now I'm going to say that David never received a single penny from Cage or from anybody for the work that he did. He dedicated a year of his life to this mission, something he sincerely believed in, because he sincerely felt frightened by what frightens you and I, which is this statocratic growth in bureaucracy.
It doesn't frighten me. I took it on. I'll take it on again.
Okay.
It angers me and it angers you. And
well,
I know that David is a far gentler soul than I am, but so you know, this is drive-by assassination. This is guilt by association.
Absolutely.
Tactics that I faced, you've seen, and there's a way to fight it. But I think David's a far more gentler guy than I am. How's he holding out through all this?
Well, right now he's depressed about it. He is. I know he's got a very strong fighting spirit. It's kept him alive through the Middle East. I know he's handling it. But here's what really, really worries me. David will make it through this. Now, he's a political scientist. He understands about slander campaigns, and what they've written is so baseless that, you know, we are taking it on for sure. But here's the message. The message is not just to David. The message is to anybody else who would dare speak up
sure.
against the anti-tobacco zealots.
And on
or
any issue.
Health nannies.
And on any issue.
Absolutely. But I'm focused on the health issue. What happens to a professor?
Dan, if you're focused on the health, Dan, if you're focused on the health issue, you got to focus on mine because they're waving frantically to do a break. Stay with us. Stay with us.
Yes, I'll be with you.
Okay, we'll be right back with Dan Romano, Cage Canada. And we're speaking with Cage co-founder Dan Romano about the persecution of his brother, Professor David Romano, by all those right-thinking, politically correct folks that think the government laws can take care of everything and you're just an enemy of the people and a corporate whore if you don't agree with everything they want. And Dan, you were making the point before the break that Cage originally started over this helmet law I was bemused by that because it brought back a memory to me of one of the Liberal leadership candidates, Jerry Kennedy, who was education minister in Ontario. His colleague Jim Watson, the Minister of Health Promotion, put forward the first helmet law because, sadly, a neighbor's son was injured driving his bicycle around their suburban subdivision. So he made everybody have to wear a helmet. Mm-hmm. And then Jerry Kennedy, not wanting to be outdone, put through another law in Ontario that almost makes it a criminal offense for parents if their kids leave high school before they're 18. And it just never ends. It reminds me of what Tacitus wrote in the Annals of Imperial Rome. When the state is most impotent, the laws are most multiplied.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do we do about fighting back against this kind of harassment? What can be done?
Well, first of all, I want everybody to know about this website. I want everybody to realize what kind of people they are over at, you know, Quebec's Coalition for Control of Tobacco and whoever else is behind it. I want people to realize what kind of danger we're headed towards, where this political correctness is almost like a new form of McCarthyism. If you're
it's a statist McCarthyism. It's like one of these movies you see about, you know, a post-nuclear Holocaust society.
Well,
everybody's brain dead. They actually think they can be protected from everything. You can be protected from nothing, public, nothing.
Yeah, well, also the anonymity of it bothers me a lot. But what bothers me the most, again, as I was saying, my brother will pull through. He's an extremely tough fellow, and it took a lot of courage to launch Cage, and he's still got that courage. He'll do all right, and a lot of the professors that have received this, both at McGill, at University of Toronto, where he is now, they've all been very, very supportive.
Should we give out the website that's attacking your brother?
Well, they can find it on the Cage website. Just on if they go to the Cage website and go to About Cage, and there find Dr. David Romano, there's a link to it from there.
Perfect.
So they can find it there. But what I'm really worried about is not so much my brother, but about scientists who are doing research, and they'll come up with facts or results that are not in support of what this anti-tobacco coalition favors. Will they dare publish what they've honestly gathered as results? What happened? And you know, no, of course, they'll be slammed. We have lots of record of such professors having ruined their careers by speaking honestly about the results of their studies. In fact, the two biggest examples are James Enstrom and Jeffrey Cabat. What about a publisher of a medical journal? Should he publish such thing? If a peer-reviewed report comes to him that secondhand smoke does not harm anybody.
Right.
Will he dare risk his career by publishing that?
The worst thing, the worst thing in a society with these kind of statocratic rules is that subtle and immeasurable effect upon the most of our citizens to adhere to the most smug biases just to fit in, just to conform. A society dies.
Mm-hmm.
It withers on the vine. You know, the biggest study of secondhand smoke with the biggest sample was 39,000 people, 1999 study out of Britain, never used by any government because it showed no correlation. Secondhand smoke, pack of cigarettes. Secondhand smoke in a pack of cigarettes, 1.5 carcinogens per parts per thousand. A bottle of spring water is 1.9. We've got scientists working in Quebec City now making certain kinds of perfumes above a certain alcohol limit illegal because they affect people's allergies. My God. A professor friend of mine said to me, what am I supposed to do if I have students in my front row have body odor? Kick them out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no end to this.
Okay, there is no end, and we should all be able to discuss it. My beef right now is that they're trying to stifle this discussion, and free and open discussion. So we've been attacked in newspapers before, we've been attacked all over. Nobody's challenging us really on the facts because they can't. They can't. We're very, very well referenced. We've really done our solid research. But for them to attack somebody and to make up these illusions, that is where the problem is. They feel so self-righteous and so correct in their absolutism that it's intolerable. And I want people to know about it. I want
and
to
that's
know
the great
what
and and that's the great and overriding danger, that people can become victimized by governments that make these silly controlling laws because they fail to attack the major issues that they're in business for. The health system in crisis, transportation grids in chaos, nothing works. That's why they make these stupidities. Dan, stand by with us. Let's just take a caller because people have been very patient. Carol, good evening. Carol?
Good evening. Always good to hear you.
Good to hear from you, too.
I just have two subjects, but the first one, I want to react to what your wonderful guest just said. I want to answer to those anti-lobbyists, not anti-lobbyists, but those anti-smoking lobby. I want to tell them that they are the biggest whores and the biggest enemy of the public. And what I would like to do with those people, if I had it my way, put them all in the smoking room, and I would extinguish personally the cigarette on their forehead.
Well,
because
Carol,
everybody sick.
I'd rather they let me go into a smoking room or a smoking restaurant. I don't really care where the hell they go.
It's important in everybody's mind. This is, you know, we can clown all we want with our.
No, it's serious. It's serious stuff.
They make me sick, and they are the biggest whores. So they have nobody to talk about.
Well, Carol, you know what? You know what the greatest revenge is? Our greatest revenge is this: that without tobacco, without alcohol, without demon rum, without. We wouldn't have any culture. We wouldn't have any writing. We wouldn't have any music. But you know our greatest revenge is going to a health food store. Everybody in that health food store looks like they're about to collapse sick. Go into a bar, everybody's happy and healthy.
Exactly.
And that's the bottom line revenge. Carol, thanks for calling. We're running up against the clock.
All
Dan
right.
Romano, thank you very much. We wish David our best, and we're going to keep hammering at this subject.
Thanks for having me.
Montreal will be right back. Come on, Canadians, let's take our country back from all the politically correct statist engineers and nonsense that we're being sold by government. Before we get to our next guest, I've got to just ease the pressure on the phone lines or Nick Mays is going to go a little hairy there, Master Control. Diane, welcome.
Thank you. It's Diane Murphy speaking from Ontario.
Yes, Diane Murphy from Ontario. Welcome.
Thank you. I'd like to say hello to Dan. And I'd like to mention that just recently on our radio, and for a very quick moment, I heard about a Heather Crowe statue of some sort. They're going to dedicate it to her because she is an Ontario woman who died from secondhand smoke because she worked in a smoking restaurant.
That's never been proven, though.
Right. I was wondering if anybody connected there tonight has any knowledge of what is on her death certificate.
Diane, could you just turn your radio down?
Sure. I thought I had it down as low as I could get it.
We're getting a little back.
Okay, sorry. I wondered if anybody in your group or and Dan's group has any knowledge of what is on Heather Crowe's death certificate?
Not yet, and strangely enough, we were talking about that.
I missed the first part, so probably...
No, I was talking about that with... we're still getting a backdraft from your radio, I think, Dan. We were talking about that before the show. No, they still don't know, but they know that it's not... there's nothing that can tie secondhand smoke to anything. Every study of even direct smoking has been based on epidemiology, not on any science, because there's nothing that can tie the two. You know, it's like the stuff with coffee. Coffee was the big... bugaboo a few years ago, and this year Harvard released two studies. One that showed that women who drink excessive amounts of coffee have a 60% less chance of breast cancer, and the second, about 6 weeks later, showing that excessive drinking of coffee actually reverses liver damage.
Yeah,
so, Diane Murphy, thanks a lot. We're up against the clock, but thanks for calling.
Okay, can I just ask one quick question?
Sure.
Do we know who this Kathy Bell is?
No.
Do you know anything about her?
No, but I think one of the reasons I wanted to do this segment is I think the more people that go to that site, mm-hmm. the more people that fill her site, and I'm saying her because Dan's not even sure if it's a pseudonym or whatever, that will out that person. Okay. That's the way to out him. You attack.
Yeah, I've been there, and I will send it to some friends.
Diane, thanks very much. A pleasure talking to you. We hope to hear from you again.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Bye.
Angelo Persichelli.
How are you?
You know, not for nothing have I said that if there is a political columnist that people need to read, it's Angelo Persichelli. How he gets away with saying some of the things he does makes me envious. And you can read him in the Hill Times, or you can read him at angelopersichelli.com. Angelo, I started the show tonight by saying this has been a day of insane news, you know, an angry news. The Julia O'Neill thing taking years to settle. The smoking nonsense came up again. An anti-smoking activist being harassed. Just stupid news days today. You know, Venezuela being turned down 7 times for Security Council. They're still in there pitching. But what hit me first this morning, I get all my papers. Front page, National Post. In Quebec, 2 liberals elect 14 delegates. And I called Graham Hamilton, who wrote the story, and I said, Graham, Angelo Persichelli, quote, broke this on our show weeks ago, and I could barely believe it. And then it goes through a litany of other writings.
Absolutely.
Where literally, like, 95 people have elected a slate of all the delegates in an inner city Montreal riding. And this is exactly what you said. But this is exactly what you said about the control of the party by a few people and the weeks ago, and how important every single riding is because there are so few liberals voting. And part of the rage against Joe Volpe, because he signed up half the new members and he didn't have to share and he wasn't sharing. So we see how every vote counts. 2 liberals elect 14 delegates. You know, Angelo, when you said it, I called you perspicacious, but, I mean, you're a seer.
Well, there are many other news that will come out pretty soon, in not just in Quebec, but throughout the country. There are initiatives in Ontario. We know what happened in British Columbia, not to mention in some provinces of Central Canada. There are ridings, for example, you were mentioning Quebec. Of course, there are ridings where... for example, Bourassa, the votes for Bob
Denis Coderre's riding, I believe. Yes, Ignatius' lieutenant in Quebec.
Joe Volpe, 0 votes. His slate, 0 vote. Bob Ray, 0 vote. And his slate, 0 vote. And they had the recount. Bob Ray had 5 votes. His slate, 9 votes, something like that. Or vice versa. Joe Volpe, 8-6 votes. Now, the question is, how can you make a mistake?
And at the beginning, it was zero.
Zero.
Unbelievable. Why isn't that story out?
Because you don't know where to start.
You don't know where to start.
Yeah, there are many of those stories. And
I want Montreal to hear this. I want to souligner, underline this again. In Bourassa riding, Denis Coderre's riding, Ignatius Lieutenant in Quebec, the first round of voting had people like Joe Volpe, Bob Ray with 0 votes. When they recounted it, and the recount, in Angelo's inimitable words to me, took longer than the recount in a banana republic, ended up with Mexico recounted a whole country in 7 days. This recount took 13 days and ended up with what, Angelo?
86 votes for Joe Volpe, and I don't remember how many for his list, 86 for his list, and 9 or 10 for him. Now, the question, how can you miss 86 votes when the total is less than 200?
Now, you see, Angelo, you're demanding too much. This is the Liberal Party, after all. Yeah. Only who they say is a bad guy is a bad guy. What they, you know, their motto is, do as we say, not as we do.
Well, we are 3 weeks from the Super Weekend. Still, they have no final results. There are candidates, they still don't have the list of their delegates.
Unbelievable. Angelo, let me keep you on for 2 seconds. We're going to a short break, and we'll come right back to you, and I want to talk about Ontario. Montreal, we'll be right back. And we're talking to Angelo Persichelli, one of the, for my money, the best political reporter in the country, who broke this story that drove me crazy from this morning on. Two delegates electing two liberals electing 14 delegates in the riding of Abitibi, Bay, James, Nunavik. We go on, 18 people voted in Repentigny, 21 people voted in Verchères Les Patriotes, 22 voters in the Beauce, 42 in Beauharnois-Salaberry, on and on and on. And those few voters elected all the delegate slates in these ridings. A total of 17% of the Liberal Party of Canada's Quebec membership voted. And Angelo, this is democracy. This is good. We could. Why don't we start our own party?
Well, there was an Italian politician who was used to say that you don't weigh votes, you count them. Well, since that in some liberal writings you weigh them, two electing 14, I think that it's a quite importance for those two people. So, but you know the problem they have at the present time in the Liberal Party barrel? Because they tried everything to stop Joe Volpe, and we know they had to resort to those all those crazy,
yep,
quote-unquote, inquiries. So they had to make those rules. You have to do
yeah,
this.
He gets,
this.
Let's just remind 20, our listeners, 000. He gets a $20,000 fine for
fine.
Some cultural community leaders paying for somebody's cards while... Even the party's lawyer, Doug Mitchell, recommended a $1,000 fine and said Joe Volpe knew nothing about it. But meanwhile, Bob Ray, who's BC campaign manager, fraudulently produced memberships. The campaign manager leaves the campaign in BC. Ray gets no fine.
Now this is the point, Beryl.
Now, that's not you don't think that's because his brother works for Paul Desmarais, do you?
Be. The point they had was just to kill Joe Volpe's bid. They did it. Now they would like to put the toothpaste into the tube. But it's too late, because if they find for $20,000 Joe Volpe, knowing, and they said so, that Joe Volpe knew nothing about it, what kind of a fine they have to give to Bob Ray? And I hear that Bob Ray has some news for other candidates, and he's going to appeal and make some waves here in Ontario, because he has found something, seems, with Kennedy. So what are they going to do if they apply the same rules that they apply to Joe Volpe? So
some good old-fashioned mudslinging. This is good.
They are in a complete
unbelievable
mess. They would try to, as I said, they are trying to put the toothpaste back into the tube.
Too late.
But it's a bit too late. So at this point, we are going to have a lot of fun up to the leadership convention
now,
that is going to take place where you are now.
My dear friend, talking about that convention, Amichimia, my dear friend Angelo, you're coming to that convention, aren't you?
Of course I will.
Now, you realize that you're going to spare 1 hour from all that partying that happens at conventions to come into the studio with us. You realize that?
Absolutely. I'm going to be where it comes to be. I don't think that I'm going to spend a lot of time.
Oh, my. Angelo, there's a great Italian philosopher, 18th century legal philosopher named Beccaria, who said, we are going to reach the time where we will see and we will live under the triumph of the mindless and the tyranny of the mediocre. And my God, if you're a liberal, that's what you're under today, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Angelo,
it's not a nice time.
Yeah, Angelo Persichelli, thank you very much for joining us. I'm glad we didn't have any technical breakdowns tonight like we did last time, and we look forward to seeing you here.
It was a pleasure.
Ciao. Buona sera.
Buonasera.
And Montreal, on that note, we will leave you. It is time to fight back against the mindless and the mediocre, because if we don't do it now, there'll be no future. Nick Mays, Master Control, thanks for putting up with all this. Montreal, we'll see you Monday.